This is Ken Chumbly of the University of Louisville Oral History Center. The date is January the 5th, 1979, and I'm interviewing for the second time Mr. Alex Berman, a Louisville attorney, at his office in the Marion E. Taylor Building. Mr. Berman is an attorney. All right, we're on then.
In the period that I grew up in Louisville, there were not a great number of young Jewish people going into professions.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the young generation, my generation at that time, we had planned to remain in business with our families because, as I've said before, many of the Jewish community, a great part of the Jewish community, was engaged in business. But as time went on, small businesses were not doing so well, especially during the time of the Depression, I would say beginning around the 1930s or thereabout. Businesses were becoming less attractive, and Jewish young people were starting to look toward professions. Prior to that time, there had been, it was difficult for Jewish boys to get into some type of professional schools, whether it was coincidence or a plan, I do not know, but there were very few students enrolled, for example, in engineering schools.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they did get into those schools, the prospects for their future was not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, there was always a difficulty getting into medical school. And as a result, there were not a great number of Jewish applicants accepted in the medical school. There was a form of a quota,
mm-hmm.
Although that cannot be definitely or officially said or proven, and I certainly do not want to be the person who is saying that it was a quota, a planned quota, but in effect, that's what it was.
I know, for instance, that there was some kind of quota system at the U of L Medical School because a prominent Jewish physician in town told me that.
Yes. Well,
I don't know whether it was above board or whether it was a stated on the books kind of policy or whether it was just sort of...
That's correct. And the same is true. There was, I don't think it was quite the case in law school.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, around that time, beginning around 1930, I believe that going to college, professional college for young people became on the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that one of the reasons for that was that big corporations were starting to take over, and a lot of the businesses were having difficulty. Small neighborhood stores, the papa and mama stores, were beginning to have problems and were not as attractive to young people as they had been in the past. We, of course, noticed that trend that continue to grow where small businesses closed down. As I said earlier, there were many, especially Jewish people, who had small grocery stores and hardware stores, clothing, jewelry stores, and such as that, and did very well.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, and then we got into the period of the Depression, where many people lost their businesses, young people started looking elsewhere for their future. Also, so as a result, I think that many of us went into professional schools.
What were the effects of the Depression on your father's business? As I recall, he was in a kind of general mercantile business.
Yes, he had a very large men and women's clothing store. It was one of the large stores in the city. And during the Depression, we suffered like everybody else, and the business was practically destroyed. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we had to sell the building that we had owned on Market Street and move into smaller quarters, different location. We had been on Market between 2nd and 3rd for many years, and then we moved to a store on Market between 1st and Brook Street. And from that point on, the business continued to decline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You all were living above the store in both at both locations?
No, we had, when we moved to 220, we first had a business at 216 and 218,
mm-hmm.
West Market, and we lived above the store there, and that was a rented building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought the property adjoining, which was 220 and 222,
mm-hmm.
and there were no living quarters there.
Yeah.
It was the building was remodeled extensively and became a modern building for those days.
Mm-hmm.
It had an elevator and that type of thing. Passenger, and we lost that building and
mm-hmm.
went to smaller places. The business declined. So, also during that period of time, many people had bought real estate. Now, my family, and it was true of many people in that the same background as my parents and of mine, where they would buy a small business place or a little piece of investment property,
mm-hmm.
and as a result of people at that time, of the same background as my family, bought real estate, not expensive real estate, but small houses, and rented them, and had an income. And as a result, it was common that when the head of the house would pass away, that he usually would leave a couple of little cottages or business places that produce enough income where the widow could get along pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It was not until the last 20 years that wives work outside of the business owned by the husband.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a typical situation with Jewish families, seldom did the wife work out. There was a joint where the husband had a small business, the wife would frequently help. And there was nothing wrong with it, but it just was not the custom for women to work away from the home. They felt it was their duty to look after the children and to maintain the home properly. And I believe that that might be one of the reasons why the records for delinquency among Jewish families and Jewish children was historically lower among Jewish communities and Jewish people than with the general community.
So your parents, by investing a bit in real estate in these properties, were able to cushion a lot of the blows from the Depression?
Well, that's true, during the Depression, much of the real estate was lost too.
True.
Because people were unable to pay rent, and there were mortgages on the property, and as a result, we couldn't pay the mortgages and had to give the property back. But of course, some of it was salvaged and managed to get through the Depression.
Tell me now, you mentioned earlier that business wasn't a lucrative profession. A lot of times, people went into business because their parents had businesses. You mentioned, though, that young Jews were beginning to enter the professions. You chose law. Where did you go to law school?
I got all of my education in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Went to University of Louisville Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And finished in 1928 and took the bar examination in 1928 and started practicing that same year. And I was 21 years of age when I started practicing.
That's rather young, isn't it? Or was it young then? Or was
you had to be 21 before you could be admitted.
Mm-hmm.
I was admitted at 21.
Mm-hmm.
And have been practicing continuously since that time. It's interesting to note that since the shift to professions, now I was the first of my generation to enter a profession.
Mm-hmm.
That is such as law, medicine, dentistry, or engineering. I don't know of any others who were in a profession at all, but I'm sure that I was the only one in those professions, first in those professions, mentioned. Now, since then, my oldest brother, who is now deceased, his son, one of them was a lawyer and another one graduated from University of Louisville's Speed Engineering School and then went to Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
He's an engineer and he finished as a graduated from Columbia in business administration and was associated with Booz Allen Hamilton, a very fine efficiency type of company. Another brother who had, now they were the children of oldest brother, Hyman Furman, and the one who was a lawyer, Donald Furman, and he practiced in Chicago. He is now deceased. My other brother, Ike, he was unmarried, no children. Then there was Dennis Berman, my brother. He's now deceased. He has a son, Harris Berman, who's a lawyer. He has three daughters, each of whom took teaching as professions. And one of the daughters married to a lawyer, Bob Kahn, he's my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And one of Dennis's daughters, who is a teacher, now one of her sons is recently become a lawyer.
How did your parents feel about your decision not to go to law school and not to go into business?
Oh, well, they approved of it. They encouraged it, yes.
Were the professions considered special, kind of cut above the ordinary?
Well, I think that going to college in itself was a little above the average.
Mm-hmm.
Today it would not be so, but
mm-hmm.
then we're talking about 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Longer than 50 years ago. It was a little unusual at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And my family encouraged it. The whole family were educated. All the nine children all graduated from high school, some college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to show how the change from a business background, how we just changed to profession.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is pretty general.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's just in our family, but we were always a family of merchants.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's not a member of the family who is a merchant, except one.
Mm-hmm.
I have a nephew by marriage. He married my brother's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Lee Grossman, and they own Love and Hearts,
mm-hmm.
a men's
mm-hmm.
store. That's an old business, and he's the only really merchant left of a very large family. They were all merchants before,
mm-hmm.
doing clothing business and liquor business and drug stores and very types of businesses. But now there's profession. Now my son, I have a son who's a doctor. He doesn't practice here. He practices in Chicago, Philip Berman. He's a gastroenterologist, and he went to Vanderbilt University for his undergraduate work, and then took his medical training in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, for example, she graduated as a teacher and now lives in St. Louis. Married an engineer, Robert Banaschek, and they live there with their family. He is a consulting mechanical engineer. But each of my brothers or sisters have professional people. We were nine.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big development in that area.
As the first ones into a profession, surely you met some kind of resistance. As you said, historically or traditionally, perhaps, your family and Jews were merchants. But we're now seeing, as you're recounting it, Jews beginning to go into the professions heretofore mainly occupied by WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, perhaps. What kind of reception did you receive?
Well, the reception that I received was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I have not had any disabling or discouraging signs of prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
I know it exists because, and those are not things that you can actually put your finger on, but you do feel it, but never to the extent where it disturbed me personally too mm-hmm. much. I regretted that the situation existed.
Mm-hmm.
Try to, at all times, to conduct myself in such a manner, and my affairs in such a manner, that I would not justify any anti-Semitism or criticism against me personally or against me as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I was associated, shared office space with Protestant lawyer for about 30 years,
mm-hmm.
a man by the name of John C. Wycliffe.
Mm-hmm.
He died about 10 years ago. We had a very fine relationship. He respected me for living and doing as I did, and I, of course, respected him likewise. He was much older than I,
mm-hmm.
and he was very helpful to me in giving me some legal guidance
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
has been helpful. So, as far as my personal association with non-Jewish people in the profession, it was quite close,
mm-hmm.
and always on a very friendly, fine basis.
In your class at the law school, do you recall how many Jews were classmates of yours?
Yes, in my class, we had a 50th class reunion last year, I think it was, and the three Jewish students who were in that class were at the reunion, and they were Sam Steinfeld, who was recently a member of the Supreme Court of the state of Kentucky. It was known as the Court of Appeals while he was on the bench. Now, Frank Garlow was also a member of that class. He was not at that reunion, but he was a member, so it was Sam Steinfeld, Frank Garlow, and I were the three Jewish members of that class, and we're all still practicing law. Sam is doing more teaching than actual practicing. Sam Steinfeld's father was a lawyer, and Sam's son is a lawyer, very fine young.
Do both of them live in town? Or?
Yes, they both live in town. Also, Frank Garlow, mm-hmm. who is in that class, has a son now who is a lawyer, Matt Garlow.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us were the Jewish students, and we got along very well with all the teachers and the other students, and there was no anti-Semitism, no mm-hmm. hostility at mm-hmm. all.
You were graduated, you said, in 1928, 2 years before the Depression, I guess, began formally. Did you enter private practice or by yourself, or did you?
Yes, I started practicing, and I was supposed to go into the office with a very fine lawyer. By the name of, there were two brothers, Joseph Seligman and Alfred Seligman. They were excellent lawyers. And I was supposed to start practicing with them. But in the meantime, I was approached by a lawyer by the name of Rosenberg, Rosenberg, who was not a native Louisvillian, but who came here and suddenly developed a tremendous criminal practice and a big part of his practice was defending bootleggers. Bootlegging was a big illegal industry at that time, and defending them was a very profitable type of business for lawyers. But anyhow, this man had a tremendous practice in that field, and he invited me to come into his office, which I did, and which I later regretted. He was doing very well for himself financially, but I was doing some of the work for him, which I did not enjoy doing, and I did not make very much money doing it. But that, I suppose, was my fault and not his. I just didn't like that type of practice, and didn't like the association with people who were bootleggers and engaged in illegal activities. So I stayed there a couple of years, and then I had office space with a lawyer by the name of Joseph Solinger, who was a very nice man, and he had a civil practice, and I stayed with him, I guess, about 5 or 6 years, and then I moved with Mr. Wickliffe, who had offices in the old Louisville Trust building. He was a real estate specialist. That's all that he did was real estate work and matters related to real estate law. He was considered an expert in this field, and a very fine man, and I stayed with him until he died in about 1968, thereabouts, I don't remember exactly when. But after he passed away, I stayed in the Louisville Trust building for a year or two, after which I joined the partnership then of it had the same name as it has now, Paulstein, Postman, Feynman & Kahn, and I merged my practice with theirs and became a member of the partnership. In addition to those in the firm name, since then, two young men have become partners, Alvin Wax and Martin Snyder, both very fine young men. Now, all of the members of the partnership have roots in Louisville, except West Virginia. He and his wife and family, very fine family, nice family, they become very active in the community. He is presently president of the Jewish Community Center. Mm-hmm. And but other than that, the rest are all practically native Louisvillians.
What kind of legal work are you doing now, and have you done since you left Mr. Wackley? Mostly
well,
real estate?
All the work, practically all of my practice is in estate work, probate,
mm-hmm.
In estate and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's a general practice. I do some carpet work and occasionally have a personal injury claim,
mm-hmm.
That type of thing that involves court work. I've always turned over to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy court work. I prefer just office
mm-hmm.
law, office work. And I am a native Louisvillian, and I've always participated in the affairs of the community. I belong to a number of organizations. I've always been active in the Knesset Israel congregation, which was originally the B'nai Jacob congregation, which consolidated with another Beth HaMedrash HaGadol
mm-hmm.
congregation to form the Knesset Israel. I have taught Sunday school there. I've been principal of the Sunday school. Was editor of their paper. Was on the board for as long as I can remember. And was president of the congregation for about 4 or 5 years. And that activity continued over a period from when the synagogue was located on Jefferson Street between Preston and Jackson, and later functioned at Preston and Fair, subsequently at a building on Floyd and Jacob Street. At that time, when it was built at Floyd and Jacob, and my father was treasurer of the congregation, and my brother-in-law, Lewis N. Schuster, was chairman of the building committee, and took a great part of the responsibility in building that beautiful synagogue, which now still stands at Floyd and Jacob and is a beautiful sanctuary. I continued my activity to the present location, the Knesset Israel Synagogue, which is now on Taylorsville Road. Lewis Schuster, my brother-in-law, was on that committee,
mm-hmm.
Very active on that, and I too was active on that committee, building that new synagogue. Also, talking about the presidents, I was president, and I was succeeded by my brother-in-law, Lewis Schuster, who was president, and then by another brother-in-law, Saul Goldberg. Saul Goldberg is now deceased and has been deceased for about 25 years. He was a very young man when he was president of the congregation, as was I. I was president before he was, and I think I was in my middle 30s when I was president. I was quite a responsibility because when I became president, I had succeeded a man by the name of Sam Goldstein, who had been president for a number of years. And the congregation, I became president in 1943, and at that time the congregation was in debt, and there was a mortgage and so forth, and I succeeded in raising enough money during the 4 years that I was president, so we paid off the mortgage during my administration, and it was debt-free. Also, it was customary in congregations, and I guess in churches of all faiths, to try to raise money during these services and from the pulpits. And we would have appeals, and the people would pledge the money right on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
This always seemed distasteful to me, and while I was president, we developed a policy that there would be no open solicitation for funds from the pulpit, and that continued for quite some time, and it added much to the dignity of the services. Also, I belong to the Masonic organization, but I was never active. That's the only organization I belong to that I was not active. I became a member when I was about 21 years of age, as were my other five brothers. I had five brothers who were Masons, mm-hmm. and myself were six. And I may have mentioned this before, that my three sisters, each of their husbands were Masons. So there were nine of us. But I was never active in that, and one of the reasons for it was during the war, when Germany, or Hitler, invaded the various countries in Europe, one of the organizations that it put out of business or destroyed were the Masonic orders, and I guess other fraternal organizations. Of course, he also destroyed the unions.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt that the Masonic organization did not protest the actions of Hitler strongly enough. They made a token protest, but didn't do anything that was very meaningful in my appraisal of the situation. They could have been so helpful, not only to the Masonic organizations and the Masonic lodges, but for humanity in general. They could have had boycotts in this country, or protested, or many things they could have done, which I didn't think they did adequately, and as a result, I've never been very active in Masonry, although I've always been a member, and just recently was given a 50-year life membership in that organization.
What do you remember were the effects, or how the Jewish community really responded before World War II? Did you have information, that is, did the Jewish community know the degree to which Hitler was persecuting the Jews and killing the Jews?
Before, I recall that during the time that Hitler was coming into power, our congregation, I was editor of the of our congregational paper, and it was just the one that was supposed to get local news, in fact, just concerning the synagogue. But just recently I had occasion to look through some of those papers, and several years before Hitler came into power, there are articles in there disclosing how this man who was practically unknown has been inciting the people of Germany, and how he is working his way into some type of leadership, and the prejudices that he was developing among the people.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was aware of it, and many people, the whole community, the Jewish community, were certainly aware of it, and the general community,
mm-hmm,
was aware of it, but did nothing about it,
mm-hmm,
except to say it's just a fad and it'll pass. But that is, he certainly gave enough warnings, and the people had enough warnings,
yeah,
to have done something to try to stop him or protect himself.
You know, of course, last summer, I believe it was, in Skokie, there was some controversy over allowing neo-Nazis to march. The American Civil Liberties Union said they should be given the right, and Jews opposed the march, and I think, I don't know whether it was a march, there was a march of Jews there in Skokie. And then in the December 22nd, I think, 1978 issue of the Post and Opinion, Jewish Post and Opinion, there was a brief article, saying that swastikas have appeared in Louisville. I'm wondering, do you see a resurgence of Nazism, a kind of neo-Nazi movement across the country and perhaps locally?
My personal opinion is that prejudice is inbred in,
mm-hmm,
some people,
mm-hmm,
and it's always going to show up in one form or another, and any indication of that type of behavior and that type of inhumanity should be stopped as soon as it's noted. And it cannot be stopped by the Jewish community alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a mistake that Jewish people have. That's a mistake that the general community has. One group cannot stop these things.
Mm-hmm.
They may be able to identify them, but it's up to the leadership of the general community to do something about it. And if the general community just pooh-poohs these things,
mm-hmm,
and makes light of it and saying that it's nothing, it's just a prank, well, that just allows the people who intent upon destroying the American form of government, and that's what it is, any type of anti-anything, or anti-any group,
mm-hmm,
is un-American, and it just gives those people an opportunity of enlarging their hold on the,
mm-hmm,
community.
What, as an attorney, and I'm wondering, what are the constitutional implications of not allowing Nazis, for instance, to march, even though a march would be...
I think that every act has to be considered as on the basis of what they're trying to do, what the purpose of it is,
mm-hmm,
what the motive of it,
uh-huh,
is. We talk about the free speech, and we've all heard the illustration saying, yes, we have free speech, but we cannot, in a crowded theater, stand up and yell fire and cause a stampede there,
mm-hmm,
where people are killed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple illustration, but that's it's a meaningful one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is with these people who are Nazis. There's nothing good identified with the Nazi movement that I know of. Now, there may be some good things,
mm-hmm,
about it, but I've never heard of any.
Mm-hmm.
It's enslavement, it's persecution, it's killing, it's,
mm-hmm,
all the horrible things of life. And when a group say, well, now these are the things we stand for, and we have rights, I think that's a misinterpretation of rights. They don't have a right to kill or to tell somebody to kill me or you or mm-hmm. your children. Mm-hmm. They don't have the right to enslave you or me or my mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. Just, even if it's going to be done by these talks and these meetings and speeches that they give, that doesn't give them the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Constitutionally, the Constitution can be interpreted in many ways, and I don't think was ever the intent of the framers of the Constitution or those who are responsible for the enforcement of the restrictions in the Constitution are to allow the opportunities provided by the Constitution to destroy somebody else in enforcing those
mm-hmm.
Rights
mm-hmm.
or taking advantage of those
mm-hmm.
rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that knowing what the organization stands for and the purpose and their program determines what they may or may not be able to do.
In another vein of sorts, how have you seen the community, the Jewish community, change from your earliest recollections to the present? In what ways has the community changed? And I mean the community broadly defined, the Jewish community.
All right, now let me make another comment, not exactly answering your question.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to an organization you probably have never heard of. It's called the Junior Order of United American Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's an organization, it's a fraternal organization. That's about 125 years old. One of the basic principles of that organization is separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
Church and state. And it's based very much on the same principles of Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
It was not, and they were very much, they're very active in the creation of the public school system. There were, I don't know, there were a few Catholics who belonged, and about maybe two or three Jewish people
mm-hmm.
belonged to that organization. I was invited to join. And I did become a member of that organization. And I became quite active in it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that I became active in that organization was that those people who belonged there, they were good people. They were not professional people. These were blue-collar people. And people in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And they had not had much contact with Jewish people. So one of my reasons for getting into that organization was I wanted to see if I could create an image that would be favorable. One of the objects of that organization was to not only restrict, but almost to eliminate immigration. And one of the precepts is to give an American benefit in every relationship
mm-hmm.
over somebody who was not an American. And when they said American, I would imagine that they were meaning somebody who, even if he was naturalized, that you should still give an American-born person an advantage over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And this organization has done a lot of good work. It has a orphanage, it has an old people's home, and some of the laws that they immigration laws that they objected to, they were probably right in doing it. And they encouraged, when a person came to this country, they wanted him to become a citizen of this country, which I think was good. And they were basically patriotic organization, United States of America, which was very, their precepts were very fine, I thought. So I joined that, and I became active in that organization.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I guess there were not over two or three Jewish people in there, and one of the reasons was that they didn't reach the Jewish community. They were not business people, they were not professional people, they were blue-collar people.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't office workers. They worked in the factories and, as I say, fine, good, hard-working people, most of them. And, of course, there were professional people, and as in every organization, and business people, too, but not primarily. So, I was very anxious to create a good impression, and I think I succeeded in doing that because I was named as they call it, I already forgot what you call it, the counselor.
Mm-hmm.
That's like president.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was elected, we had 3,000 members in our chapter here in Louisville. It was a very effective group.
Sounds large, too.
Yes. And I guess in Jefferson County, I imagine there were 10,000 members. And I respected them, all of their, because they were of a different religious faith, but I participated in all the activities and the services, and they made me the counselor, and I've had a very fine relationship with this group.
You're still a part of it.
I'm still a part of it. I make speeches at various organizations for them because it is a patriotic organization.
Tell me the name of it again.
Junior Arter, United American Mechanics. And they respected me. They all knew that I was Jewish. I made it a point.
Are there many Jews among the 3,000 members now?
No. Well, still, now this group has, in around here, has dwindled. I don't guess there are 500 members belong to it here now.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to be very, a very active group.
Tell me briefly, if you will, since we're
running out of tape.
Again, how you've seen the community change, the local Jewish community.
Well, I think the local community, local Jewish community, first place, the numbers of the local Jewish community have not changed. The Jewish census, we have, I think, about 8,500 Jewish people in this community. And it has been that for a number of years. The Jewish community has tried to carry on the good tradition that it has had for so long a period of time. This has always been a well-organized Jewish community. We had a very fine YMHA, they were rare in the country of community this size. And incidentally, I was a member of the board of directors of that for many years. They had a Jewish hospital, which was the, and I think today it is the smallest Jewish community that has a Jewish hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on that board for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they've retained all these things.
Mm-hmm.
They have a, and they've tried to upgrade it. They've gotten more. There have been a lot of good people moving to Louisville who have become active in our community, which has enriched it. Has been beneficial. The Jewish community itself, the Jewish population itself, is much more integrated than it was as recently as 25 years ago.
Integrated in that?
Among itself.
It's more unified?
More unified. Where the there's no division as marked as it used to be between the Orthodox and Reform and Conservative, are the rich and the poor, and all of the Jewish community now, the present generation, the younger generation, they're well educated, all college has become a common thing now for every Jewish young man or woman.
Among young Jews, do you think there's a growing interest in their Jewish roots, if you will? Their Jewish heritage, the language, the tradition, the history?
I think that the Israel has done a lot to solidify the Jewish thought among the young people. That has... is a common central point for Jews of all degrees, and has done a lot to solidify them and to make them more Jewish conscious. A person today more at ease to publicly say I'm a Jew than was the case 25 or 50 years ago. I believe, too, that the general community has found that and recognized that the Jewish population make a contribution to the community, that they serve the community, they've participated in every worthwhile communal program. I believe that they have shown the general community how to be charitable, how to give charity, how to be charitable not only in with money, but I think in their conduct. I believe that the leadership that many Jews have shown in the problems of the blacks and trying to establish their rights and protect their rights have shown that they're charitable in their ideology toward other people.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere, I can't recall now the author of the article exactly, but the author, a Jew, argued that that Jews in the United States are becoming more conservative. There's a shift, he argues, from liberal causes, liberal ideology, from involvement in, say, the American Civil Liberties Union, the NAACP. There's a shift away from those liberal causes, that liberal ideology, to a more conservative outlook. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I don't think so. I think that they're still as interested in, and as active in good causes as they have ever been. However, I think that the Jewish community should be sure that their own interests are not jeopardized by trying to protect the rights or the proclaimed rights of other people, like in this suit where the civil liberties want to give the right to Nazis to march. Mm-hmm. I think that's a mistake. I don't think that they should participate in a thing like that, in something that is, which is basically morally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Theory is good, but that's something that basically it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not trying to march for anything good.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to march to destroy the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
So why should they support something like that?
I want to thank you. We've run out of time
okay.
for participating.
All right,
okay.
Thank you.